Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Sinead O'Carroll, Kevi Lynch, Adele Lynch, and Lindsay Amar are the band Bewitched. Their manager Kim Glover signed the group to Glowworm Records, the Epic Records label she ran in 1997. The label's co-head, Ray Hedges, produced all of Bewitched's releases. The band released their debut single, C'est la Vie, in 1998, allowing the band to become the youngest girl group to have a number one in the UK at the time. Following its release in the United States, this song went to number 9 on the Billboard Hot 100. Subsequent singles Rollercoaster, To You I Belong, and Blame It on the Weatherman also topped the UK chart. Their self-titled debut album, released in 1998, reached number 3 on the UK albums chart and was certified 2x platinum in the UK. The album also peaked at number 12 on the US Billboard 200 and was certified platinum in the US. In 1999, Bewitched appeared on the ABBA tribute single Thank ABBA for the Music, which reached number 4 in the UK, and recorded a cover of Does Your Mother Know for the subsequent ABBA Mania album and TV special. Along with Britney Spears, they performed the opening act for NSYNC's World Tour. Bewitched's second album, Awake and Breathe, released a year after their debut, peaked at number 5 on the charts and was certified platinum. Singles from the album included Jay-Z Hold On, which reached number 4, I Shall Be There, which reached number 13, and Jump Down, which reached number 16. After a number of live performances and TV appearances, the band split in 2002. In 2012, it was announced that Bewitched would reunite for the ITV2 series The Big Reunion, along with 5 other pop groups of their time. Due to the success of the show, the band embarked on an arena tour around the UK and Ireland in 2013. Since The Big Reunion aired on television, the band has consistently released new music and toured successfully around the world. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Lindsay Amar from Bewitched. Lindsay, where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Hi, I am in Manchester in the UK and I'm doing really well, thank you. Yes, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you so much for asking. Okay, so now let's rewind. So first of all, why and where does the name Bewitched come from, and how was the spelling chosen?
Well, gosh, I haven't been asked that for quite a while, actually. It's an interesting one. Bewitched was thought up by our producer, Ray, and our manager at the time, Kim. And we had 3 names before that, which not many people know. So the first name, when we first got ourselves together, we called ourselves Desire. Then shortly after that, I don't remember why we changed it. I think we found out that there was another band called Desire, so we decided to change it.
Okay.
And we changed to Sassy.
Okay.
Which is worse. And then we met our manager, and she was like, no, not Sassy. Changed it to Sister, but that didn't really stick either. And then when our producer came on board, the two of them started thinking about something different, and they came up with Bewitched, which in the beginning we were like, no way, we hate it, absolutely not. And they were like, no, it's really good, it's fresh, and it's got lots of, you know, magic kind of element to it, which we can play with and all the rest of it. So we were like, oh, okay. So Bewitched it was, but obviously now it's like, well, we wouldn't be anything else, would we?
So how long did it take for you guys to actually like the name?
I don't remember, probably like a few weeks or something. We got used to it, we got our heads around it. And then, you know, after that, when people start recognizing you as that, it's
why the spelling B star W capitals and then the rest? Why was that?
I think it was something to do with the TV show. So we couldn't use that exact word as it was. So we had to change it.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay, now let's rewind. Lindsay's story specifically. At what age did you think, cool, you want to be in this creative, this entertainment world? whether it was a child or a teenager. And then how did that lead you to meeting the rest of the ladies from Bewitched? And let's dive into your story.
I was always into music, so I started learning the piano at the age of 6, and then I picked up the guitar when I was about 13. And at that point, I mean, I always used to make up music on the piano. Like, I used to have my sheet music in front of me that I was supposed to practice, and then I used to do that for like 5 minutes, and then I'd be like, right, now I want to just make up a tune. So I would just compose music on the piano from a very young age. Not saying it was amazing, but that was where my mind was, and in the creating of the music rather than just the learning. And then when I picked up the guitar at about the age of 13, then I started writing songs and with, you know, lyrics, and I started to sing as well. And then I think all through my teenage years, I loved music, and I think I always dreamed in my mind that I would have a career in music. But I think in that era, it was kind of seen as a hobby and not a career and not a job. So there was never really any kind of opportunities really presented to me in terms of, oh, you know, you could study production, or you could study, you know, musical theater, or you could study this or the other. So it was kind of like the natural thing for me throughout high school was to be geared towards doing something business related after school. It was either in my school, it was either you do medicine or you do law or you do business. And I was like, I don't want to do law. Okay, I'll do business. It covers a lot of things. So I applied to Trinity College in Dublin, which is one of the best universities in Ireland. And I got a place in that university to study business. But I felt at the time like I wanted to take a year out in between the end of school and university. So I wanted to either travel or just explore music and just see if I could get a record deal or if I could do some gigs or whatever. And it was in that year that a mutual friend introduced me to the other three girls, and they had already formed a band, but they were looking for a fourth member. And this mutual friend introduced us, and he had said to them, you know, I think I found your girl. And then he said to me, I know you're into music, but have you ever thought of being in a band with other girls? And I was like, I could think about that. You know, that might be cool. So he told me a bit about them. And then I was like, oh, that sounds cool. And he was like, they're really talented. And then he was obviously saying the same thing to them about me. So anyway, we arranged this meetup, and it was so funny because, you know, you would think of it as a bit of an audition, really, but it was so relaxed. It was like I arrived in my tracksuit and my hair gelled back. I had short hair at the time, and I had a cassette of some songs that I'd written, and I just, you know, recorded them on my dictaphone. And they were there. Kiwi and Adele were there first, and they had the same on as me. They had tracksuits on and their back. And it was like, oh, hi. It was all so innocent and naive. And I was like, these are my songs. And they played it. They were like, oh, they're really nice. And, you know, you've got a nice voice or whatever. And then Sinead arrived like a few minutes later, and she was dressed slightly differently. So I didn't really know it was her to begin with, because she was like in her little mini dress, little mini skirt, a yellow mini skirt with white tights and black patent leather shoes.
Oh, she's going
to kill, you know, her hair kind of glamorous. And then she walked in, and I was like, who's that? But she was so lovely. She was like, hi. Anyway, they were like, this is Sinead. I was like, oh, okay. Very different. But yeah, cool. So anyway, that was funny. But that was our first meet. And then at the end of that meeting, they just said, you know, do you want to be in the band? And I was like, yeah. And that was the beginning. So very, very naive and very innocent, and it kind of, you know, it was weird. You know, the way you just think sometimes things just happen, and yeah, for a reason, and the stars just align. And, you know, even the fact that I took a year out, it wasn't really the done thing amongst my friends. It, like, nobody else was doing that. And I was like, no, I want to take a year out because I felt like I really needed to give the music passion in me a chance before diving into a career and a world that I didn't really know if I wanted to do. In all honesty. And I was like, it's such a big commitment to actually go and study business for 3 years and immerse myself into something that I'm kind of only doing because I don't really know what else to do, you know? And I have to say, my parents were fully supportive at the time. They were amazing. And I probably wouldn't have been able to do it without that, you know?
So you reference the innocence and naivety, and I understand that the music entertainment world is quite hard and harsh and quite intense. So did you guys manage to maintain that innocence and naivety moving into this big world of the entertainment industry, or was quite a lot of it taken away from your experiences?
I think in some ways we gained it. I think just down to the kind of personalities that we are, and I suppose the upbringing that we had, in Catholic Ireland, we were very good girls. Like we
Yes.
never, we weren't kind of off, we didn't go off the rails. We didn't delve into kind of the night life element of the industry. We were never kind of sidetracked in that respect. So we always kind of, we were very, our work ethic was really good, I suppose. And we also had each other to keep ourselves grounded and on the straight and narrow. So in that respect, and I think as well, we always kind of, we didn't let doubt come into our minds. So along at the beginning, it was kind of like people always used to say, did you ever think it was going to be as successful? And it's like, well, we didn't really think. We were just doing it. We didn't think about the end result. It was just like, do you know what? Yeah, we're doing this. This is our what we love doing. We're just going to do it and see what where it goes. So that naivety stayed. However, the other side of it, where we had to grow up very quickly because suddenly we owned a business. So we had to, we had to learn on the job very quickly because it's one thing being able to perform, but it's another thing being able to talk to managers and record companies and look at contracts and lawyers and this and that and the other. So suddenly it was like, okay, grow up very quickly and make decisions, important decisions, and also be away from family for weeks and months on end in different countries that you've never been to before, and not have that kind of family support around you and be out there on your own doing it. And then came the success and the fame. Oh, quickly learn how to deal with all of that huge stuff. You know what I mean? And we were like 19, 20. It's like, it's just a lot, So in one respect, we kept the naivety, and in another, I think we grew up very, very quickly.
So yes, you guys knew that it was what you were doing. You were working hard. But at the time of having four consecutive number ones in the charts, did you guys take a moment to say, wow, this is amazing. Congratulations. Or did it take you by complete surprise?
I think it took us by complete surprise, especially when C'est la Vie came out. I think we'd worked so hard before that because we'd done up and down the country. We were doing under 18s nightclubs. We were doing school assemblies first thing the next morning after a late night, doing the nightclubs. We were then traveling, doing radio interviews up and down the country for months and creating a fan base from scratch, literally just doing all the groundwork. So when the record company gave us a date for release, it wasn't like now where you can gauge the reaction with social media and
Yes.
there's a little bit of a feedback straight away. Whereas back then it was all very unknown. And until you actually found out what the midweek chart position was, you had no clue who was buying it, how many people wanted it, who was playing it, this, that. You basically, it was like in the dark. I have no idea it's there, but who knows what's happening, So when we got the midweek position, which is on a Wednesday, we were in a producer studio at the time, and he took the call and he was poker face. Like, and we were literally like, we are waiting for him to get off the phone, and he was like, okay, all right, thank you, bye-bye, put the phone down, and he went, we were like, what? So it was a complete shock. And I think from that point, things just got so crazy. It was like, right, all European territories were calling us. They wanted us to go and do promo in all the different territories. Then after that, it was right, now we need to release the second single and come back. We need to do the video. We need to do this. And then it was that. And it was like a conveyor belt. Suddenly it was like you're on this roller coaster, excuse the pun, that you can't get off. Like it's going. It's going. So in some respects, I don't think we did actually get to pat ourselves on the back. I don't think we actually ever got to slow down and go, oh my God, we've done it. Like, just keep going. Just keep going. Just keep going. Keep the momentum going, because people kept saying, you're only as successful as your last single. You've got to keep it up now. You've got to, the pressure is on to maintain this level of success. And that was the tricky part, because suddenly you've got it, but then it's like the pressure is there to keep it. So there was that. And then, of course, we decided to go and try and crack the American market. And that was a huge, huge undertaking, because you have to spend a lot of time out there. It's a huge territory. And we spent about 18 months there. So again, it was a long time away from home, so it was a big task, but we managed it as well. So yeah, it was a crazy time, crazy, crazy time.
You guys, then you were going and then you released a few albums. Then you guys took a break. What did you do yourself during the break?
I put together a studio at home, in like a home studio. So I learned all about the technological side of things. So I delved into that producer kind of side of things. And then I started writing songs, and I was writing songs kind of for me, but also just, other projects that were going on around me. And people would come to me and say, "Oh, have you got a song for this? And can you write a song for that?" And so I was kind of just experimenting a lot with that. And then I had enough songs to kind of do a solo thing with. And so I went to the record companies with that. And then I got a development deal, but that kind of didn't transpire because there was changes in the record company, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, long story short, I decided that I wanted to come away from the music industry for a while. And I went and I studied acting for 2 years, which I loved, and was a huge kind of learning curve for me on a personal level as well, because, well, acting is kind of the study of human condition and human mind. So it was kind of like 2 years of therapy in a way. So it was like, oh, that's who I am, and that's why I do. Yeah, so that was great. And then not long after that, well, I was getting some acting jobs after that, and then not long after that, the big reunion on ITV, which is a TV show over here, they came and asked us to get back together for this documentary that they were doing. So we were like, oh God, we haven't been a band for 12 years now at this stage. That's a long break. Do we do it? Is it going to be good? Is it going to be disastrous? What should we do? In the end, we decided to do it, and it was successful. The documentary was huge, and then we did a tour afterwards as well with all the bands that were on it together. And then we decided to just keep gigging after that. So we have been together doing live shows since 2012, which is bizarre because we're actually together longer, way longer this time than we initially. It's bonkers. So yeah, so that's what we've been doing.
So I saw you guys when you were in South Africa at the Sandton Square. I actually was there in the audience. And I've got actually I've got I was there for you guys did the sound check, and I came running backstage and I had pictures. So I was living overseas, so all my photo albums, still got photo albums, are in a box somewhere. So I couldn't get the photo to check. So I've got a picture with a couple of you guys from way back then.
Yeah, I remember that. We loved it there so much. I have such vivid memories of that, and going to the top of Table Mountain and all the
Yes.
rest. So beautiful.
So just putting out there that you guys must come visit again. But
Oh, I'd love to.
what do you enjoy about performing live?
I enjoy the audience. Obviously, I enjoy performing, but I think from the experience that you have every time you go on stage, every experience is different, and that is because of the audience. Every audience is different, so it's almost like you feed off each other, and it's like a communal kind of experience, if you like. But that's the thing for me. So that dictates to me whether I have a good gig or not. If I come off stage, I'm like, oh my God, that audience was amazing, and you can just feel it from them. They're either really into it and enjoying themselves and in the moment, or maybe they're kind of a bit like, not in the moment and distracted, or kind of just maybe just watching, what I mean? But usually it's the audience and the energy that comes from them. That's what I love.
Okay, so I've got a point of discussion around this. I always ask all my artists, and I love to hear every person's response to this. So I'm normally that guy that's right up in front. I'm dancing, I'm jamming, I'm doing my thing. I'll take my cell phone out for one or two songs, or so at least one or two photos, a couple of videos, and I put my cell phone away.
I notice a lot of people around me are posting, videoing, tweeting for a lot of period of time. And you referenced being in the moment and the energy. Do you not find that that aspect of it, of the being on the phones, takes away from being in the moment and the energy, or it's just where society is at the moment?
A bit of both, I think. I have to agree with you. I personally, when I'm at something, whatever it may be, I either forget to take my phone out and take photos, which then afterwards I'm like, oh, didn't take any photos. I did it. Oh, you know what I mean? Or I'll remember, but I'll do it for like a few minutes. And then I might write that. Now I want to just be here and experience it, because otherwise you're experiencing something through your device. And even like things like, you know, my kids' kind of school concerts and stuff sometimes. And I always think I must take some footage to send to, you know, people, the grandparents and all, just to show people. And then I'll find myself just being like so mesmerized. I'm like, oh, my phone. Like, I take seconds and then I'm like, right, I'm putting it away now, because I just want to be there. But I find it hard to understand how people don't want to just be there in the moment and just watch. So I do agree with you on that. However, it is part of society, isn't it? And it's kind of like anything, I think, with how technology moves on, you either resist it or you embrace it. And it's tricky because you do have to find the balance. I have to say, you know, in recent gigs, I don't feel like I notice it. I don't feel like I notice it at our gigs. Maybe it's different at different concerts, but at our gigs, I think maybe that's because our audience are kind of our age. And so we have that sense of the before and the after the social media. I think the younger generation are so brought up in that environment that to them it's just second nature. That's just how life is for them. So they don't really know otherwise. They just, that's what they do. They're like, oh, I'm here, you know, look, I'm here.
Yes. Yeah.
But for us, our audiences tend to be our age. And so they don't have their phones out. They might, you might see people taking a few pictures and a few videos. And then afterwards, they're always like, oh, can we get a selfie and stuff? And that's fine. But yes, I think it's the generational difference.
Exactly. Nostalgia. Nostalgia is a key thing that's happening with in entertainment. Like, you know, movies, they get reboots of all these shows, and movies like Beetlejuice 2 is coming out from where the first one came out in the 80s. But also we notice that a lot of nostalgia around music from the 80s and 90s. You have these rewind festivals, these 90s shows that all ages are going to. I mean, I've been to a few, and it's a lot of the young people as well. What are your thoughts around why it is so relevant and prevalent in entertainment and society these days?
I think we maybe touched on it a little bit with the whole kind of technological side, because I feel the 90s was possibly the last era before the technological thing all just went crazy and the smartphones came out and everything else. And I think the 90s was such a time for people who that remember it with such nostalgia. I think everything seemed optimistic in the 90s. And that's such a weird thing to say, but I feel like there was a sense of optimism, and people missed that. Like, there was, the music was so good. The, you know, there was so many different pop acts and bands that people could just find escapism in, and the music, and just kind of feel a little bit carefree and then movies were great. You know, you had Friends, you know, it was a good time. I think it was a good time. And the 80s as well. Like, I think I was maybe a little bit young to remember that as much, but you know, it's the same sort of thing. It's just that feeling of nostalgia for a certain time in your life. I think things changed a lot in the 2000s. And I think a lot of that is down to the technological side of things. You know, I think people have had to really adapt. And then, as I say, this new generation have been kind of raised with it. So it's just a very different era. Very different.
So another discussion point that I like to have. As mentioned before, I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. I love the aesthetic of holding. I love the journey of the choice, the receiving, the unpacking, the playing from songs one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, even cassettes and vinyls, massive comebacks around the world. In Asia, they reopened a vinyl factory that had been closed for 50 years. Yeah, in the UK, There's a basket of goods that they analyze for tax purposes. Vinyls have always been in it, but now because of the upsurge of CD sales again, that's now back in that basket of products. Research is showing that it's actually the younger people, the teenagers that are buying it, not the older nostalgic people. It's mainly those are the target audience. But then we've also got these streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
It's interesting. I feel like I am kind of learning about the landscape at the moment, because we've just recently released some new music.
Yes.
Got an EP out, and it's, you know, just in the last few weeks. And it's so very different now to how it was back then in terms of releasing music. Obviously, now it's all digital. And like you say, I do hear of the physical side of it coming back. But for us, our release was digital, and the record company was like, no, it's, you know, it's just, it's all digital. And we were like, oh, so how long is the promo campaign beforehand? You know, we're used to at least a 6 week kind of lead up with promo and stuff. Oh, no, don't worry. We just, you know, a week or two of social media stuff. It's like, okay, I have to leave your house, really. You can do it from remotely. It's just like, oh, gosh, it's so different. So, so different. So I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of learning a lot about the landscape at the moment. But I definitely, it's interesting to me that the younger generation wants to know more about that physical aspect, you know, the CDs and the vinyls. And I'm actually really happy to hear that, because I think the experience is so different. I feel like the whole digital element of it has made it very disposable.
Yeah.
It's all so kind of almost like a conveyor belt of material. And it's like, you know, even the speed to which artists release music, it's so fast. Yeah. And it's like people's attention span is getting smaller and smaller, to the point where you're like, okay, you know, I like that person's song, you know, what's the next song? It's like, why can't you just listen to that song that you like, you know, for the next months, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, even I notice that, you know, with people, if I have a young person in the car with me and I have they're like, oh, turn that song up. I love that song. So I'll be like, oh, cool. Play the song. And after the first chorus, they're like changing it. I'm like, but the song's not finished.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, no, I've heard what I want to hear. It's like, wow, you're not even listening to a full 3 minute song. Mm-hmm. Attention span. It's like they need that constant dopamine hit. So it's nice for me to hear that the whole CD thing might be coming back, because I just feel like it brings it back into a tangible music, into a tangible thing that you hold, and that you look at the picture and you read who wrote it, and that you put it in the CD player and you it's the satisfaction element of
yes.
it all. Own it. You actually physically own it.
Totally. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously I relate, because I still do that. Okay. So you referenced it a little bit earlier. So tell us about the new music.
So the new music is, we've got a 4-track EP out at the moment. It's called Ripped Jeans. And we just basically got back in with our old producer who we, you know, did all our albums with. And the recording process is always just so much fun with him. He's like the fifth member. So we've got a bit of everything on there. We've got So Into You, which is a real up-tempo track, bit of a summer vibe, you know, just really kind of energetic. We've got Multiply on there, which is a bit more kind of chill. And then we've got Birthday, which is a song that we released actually last year for our 25th birthday, which is quite a cool track. It's got a little bit of an R&B kind of edge. And then we've got Greatest Little Mistake, which is like a ballad, but it's quite an angsty kind of, yeah, it's got an undercurrent of kind of anger. Quite interesting for us. It's a bit different, but I think like all our albums, really, we always liked to experiment with different sounds and not try and pigeonhole ourselves into one sound and kind of just regurgitate that. So we liked to try the different elements of music: a bit of rock, a bit of pop, a bit of R&B, a bit of this, a bit of Irish, a bit of that. Yeah, the lead track is So Into You, which is obviously available. They're all available on all the streaming platforms. But yeah, so it's quite exciting for us. It's the first bit of new material we've done for over 10 years. And it's just nice for us to keep things fresh, I think, especially when we do so many gigs and shows. It's nice for us to be able to introduce a new song. And it keeps us interested and it keeps us feeling fresh and excited as well. Obviously, it's great doing the old stuff because everybody wants to hear it. But for us, we kind of need to be doing something creative as well to keep us going.
And do you think that it would lead to more new creativity down the line for a release of a whole album?
Potentially, yeah. I think we'd like that. And I think our producer would definitely be on board with that. I think it would just depend on, I mean, is it about albums anymore? Is that a thing that record companies maybe decide, well, it's not about that. It's just, you know, do another EP or do singles. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we're definitely up for it. You know, we're definitely open to it. So, yeah.
So I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 10 years, 5 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time. I recognize that and I understand that because there are millions of them. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to choose 5 songs by other artists to play once we finish this conversation, what would those 5 songs be and by whom?
Okay. I would choose All I Wanna Do by Sheryl Crow. I would choose something by Coldplay, Paradise. I would choose Vision of Love by Mariah Carey because that's the song that made me want to be a singer. So what's that, 3?
Yeah, 2 more.
I would definitely choose... I would choose So Into You from Bewitched.
Yes, there we go.
And 1 more. Let's think of something. Maybe Tilted by Christine and the Queens.
Oh, lovely. Okay. Most of those are on my list. Just need to add a couple. So thank you for that. Lindsay, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
I guess I'd just like to say thank you for a lovely interview and some lovely questions. And just, I guess, thank you to all the listeners, really, for listening. And I hope you guys enjoy our music, our new music, and maybe come to a show nearby soon. We hope to see you soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.